Chapter 2, Mark 4.14.11.
"Explain this," says the word-bearer. His name is Ulmer Null. "There was an ambush," says Vilteth. "Two of the ultramarines."
Null looks down at the corpse of the cataphractii.
"They did this."
"They did this," agrees Teth. "They killed my watcher, killed members of my team, and then took the speeder. One was a captain."
"Why didn't you stop them?" asks Null.
"The cataphractii couldn't stop them," says Teth in surprise. "What makes you think I could?"
He pauses.
"Forgiveness, Magir. They were legionaries. We had no means."
"You have stayed in position since the attack, waiting for support?"
"Yes, Magir."
Ulmer Null raises his warp flask. He speaks into it, alerting the formation officers that at least two more of the enemy elite are loose in that section of the starport.
"They might have transport," he adds.
Null looks at his squad members.
"They need to be hunted down," he says simply.
One of his men, Kelter, nods and brings the tracker forward. He has to use the electric goad. The tracker is angry and uncooperative. It's about the size of an adult mastiff, but it's bulkier and it's not canine. It growls and snuffles, drooling mucus from its flared black flesh nostrils.
"We need something they touched," says Null.
"The captain touched me," says Teth. "He knocked me down."
He's still saying it when he realizes he's an idiot. Null looks at him and nods.
Magir, no,
Teth begins to say. The tracker surges forward. It's on him. Teth shrieks as it begins to eat him alive.
"It's got the taste," Kelter says.
He pulls the tracker off the Kalmandori warrior. Teth's not dead. He should be. He ought to be. Too much of him is missing and gnawed away for him to ever mend or lead any kind of life. He can't speak. He can't even express his overwhelming agony, except to paddle his fingerless hands and churn what's left of his jaw. The tracker starts to move, following the psych sense it has devoured. The word-bearers fall in behind it.
"What about him?"
one of them says to Ulmer Null, indicating the twitching remains.
"You could end his pain."
"Pain is something we learn from," says Null, "and mercy is a waste of ammunition."
Mark 4.26.11. The Ultramarines captain puts up a decent fight. Cornered and outnumbered, he tries to do as much damage as possible before the inevitable. Sorochure makes the kill. He puts two mass reactives into the bulkhead behind the Ultramarine, and the force of the blasts in the enclosed space rams the cobalt-blue figure out of cover. He tries to get up, but it's too late. A third shell takes his head off. Chure walks back to the Yard's master control room. He masses his squads, marshalling human prisoners or dragging out the bodies of the enemy dead. A sheen of blue smoke hangs in the air. The Zetsun Verid Yard is now secure. It's taken longer than expected. This irks Chure. He had hoped that sheer bewilderment would knock the fight out of the 13th, but they stuck to it. His only solace is that the Shadow Magi have exceeded their estimates too. They're still at work recalibrating the Yard's main systems. Cor Faron's displeasure will mostly be reserved for them. In the master control room, some Magi are working with power tools, removing still more deck plates and wall panels to access sheaves of cables. Others are performing more delicate processes, probing intricate circuitry with watchmaker instruments, many of which are fused into their digits. A few have linked directly via the MIU ports, freeing their minds into an improvised new spheric environment in which they can rebuild the Yard's shattered manifold architecture. They are bathing in the warm essence of the Octet code loose in the systems. Cor Faron, master of the faith, is not exasperated. Chure finds him in a control office overlooking the main chamber, a glazed brass box like an ecclesiastical confessional. He is reading from a roughly bound book, the Book of Lorgar. It is not the whole book, of course, merely one volume. The Book of Lorgar fills an entire data stack and has been transcribed by hand into 9,752 volumes. The number increases regularly. Cor Faron has personally gathered a 10,000-strong staff of rubricators and scribes to copy the book and to multiply those copies. each senior officer of the 17th and each planetary overlord appointed by the Wordbearers is expected to own and study a set. Ture understands that sets are also being prepared as gifts for each of the Primarchs who have thrown their loyalty behind Horus. Copies of copies of copies. Peturabo's edition will be bound in etched steel. Fulgrim's will be bound in living flesh. Alpharius will be presented with two editions, each subtly different from the other. Horus's set will be wrapped in the tanned hide of betrayed legionaries. Copies of copies of copies. Lorgar reviews each edition, line by line. Transcription errors are punished by death, or worse. Just the day before they translated into the Viridian system, a rubricator was disemboweled for missing a comma. Ture enters the control office. He can see, now he is closer, that the book Cor Pharaon is reading is one of the master copies, one of the original manuscripts. It is in the Primarch's own hand, directly as he composed it. This is the latest volume, ready for dissemination. Cor Pharaon always makes a close personal study of the new installments before passing them to his staff for copying, archiving, and publication. Cor Pharaon is reading secrets that no one else has yet seen.
"I apologize for the delay," says Ture.
Cor Pharaon shakes his head, raising a claw hand, still reading.
"The Magi have explained it," he says. "Our devastation of the Kelth new spherics was more fundamental than we hoped. There is a lot to rebuild. Another 10 minutes, as I understand it." "I will be happy when you are securely back aboard your ship, Master," says Ture.
Now Cor Pharaon looks up. He smiles.
"Your care is noted. But I am safe here, Sorot."
He looks frailer than ever. A halo of filthy Empyrean light flickers around him. Ture can see flashes of his bones through his skin like sporadic X-rays. Cor Pharaon is maintaining a vast degree of warp craft.
"Come, Sorot," he says. "Read with me for a moment."
Sorot Ture steps to the console and looks at the open book. He notes the intricate beauty of the handwriting. There is barely a hint of blank paper on the pages.
"He uses a stylus and ink," says Cor Pharaon, as if marvelling. "In this day and age, a stylus. Of course, I have the rubricators do the same thing." "I understand that..."
Cor Pharaon looks at him.
"What, Sorot?"
"I was going to say, Master, that I understand Gilliman also uses a stylus."
"Indeed? Who told you that?"
"Luciel."
"The one you killed?"
"The first sacrifice, yes."
"He was your friend."
"That is why the death had value," says Ture.
"Yes, I believe that Reboot Gilliman uses a stylus," says Cor Pharaon. "He writes a lot of words, as I have been told, not a great deal of content, however. He writes a treatise on warfare, on combat mechanics, on the theory of fighting. Childish concerns. The man clearly has no soul or character, and no interest in the metaphysical subjects that challenge those of more considerable intellect. Our beloved Primarch already knows all there is to know about killing. He has no need or reason to write it down. The principles are simple. That is why he is able to go beyond records of gross practicality and invest his time and energy in consideration of the great mysteries, the workings of this universe and others, the nature of existence.
Cor Pharaon looks at him.
You know, Lorgar simply records what is dictated to him, what is whispered to him and him alone.
By the gods?
Asks Ture.
By the powers of eight, replies Cor Pharaon. By the speakers of the void and the voices of the abyss, by the primordial annihilator out of the throat of the warp.
There is a call from outside. The Magi have finished their work. Cor Pharaon closes the book and rises to his feet.
Let us put their good work to use, shall we?
He asks. Mark 4.55.34. The Zetsun Verid Yard systems come online, restarted by the Shadow Mechanicum. A data engine resumes operation. Sensing that the planetary weapons grid is inactive and that the inactivity has been caused by the inexplicable loss of the data engine hub located aboard Kalf Viridian Anchor, the engine automatically obeys protocol and assumes control, taking up the slack reins of the grid system. Zetsun Verid contains one of the advanced engine hubs capable of substituting, in an emergency, for the primary orbital hub. The Kalf weapons grid goes back online. Its manifold reignites. Corferon observes the work, observes how the scrap code of the octet is firmly established in the new spheric architecture. He determines his target and the Magi hurry to set and lock the coordinates. All the orbiting weapons platforms, as well as several ground-based stations, including the polar weapon pits, activate and begin to track as their power reservoirs come up to yield. It takes approximately 10 minutes before authority lights flicker green along the Master Control Room's main console.
"Target resolution achieved," reports the senior Magos, scrap code Benaric chattering behind his meat voice. "You may fire when ready," says Kor Faeron.
There is a glimmer, a flash, beams of coherent energy, beams of staggering magnitude rip from Kalf and from its orbital stations. Kalf has a weapons grid capable of keeping at bay an entire expedition fleet or primary battle group. Only the most devious and ingenious treachery has circumvented it today. The weapons grid begins to discharge. Kalf begins to kill the neighbouring planets in the Viridian system. It starts with a massive asteroid world that orbits the system beyond the circuit of Kalf's moons. The asteroid, called Our Master, is the main remnant of a planet that once occupied that orbital slot. It is now a rock the size of a major satellite. It is no longer called Alamaster. It is known as Viridia Forge. It is the system's principal Mechanicum station and the most significant manufacturing venue in 6 systems. Viridia Forge is helpless. Its systems crashed by the same scrap code that brought the Kalf grid down. It has no shields, no responsive weaponry, and no means of evasion. It takes 4 prolonged strikes from the weapons grid. The first 2 burn away surface rock and immolate rockcrete bastions or adamantine bulwarks. The 3rd voids the main fabricatory to space and combusts the Forge world's reactor power systems. The 4th causes Viridia Forge to explode like a newborn star. For the next 18 minutes, Kalf has no night side.